Okay, Joe, Merry Christmas. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, Tim. Merry Christmas to you and to all the Kellys all
Thank
around the
you.
world.
Thank you. Well, Joe, this week, as we, I guess this is, we're heading into the final week of 2020, we just talk about what would constitute a positive reset, a good reset, as opposed to the great reset. But before we get into that, maybe we'll talk about what happened in the past week. Of course, I don't know if you caught it, but some notables, some celebrities got the COVID-19 vaccine, reportedly. One was, of course, the eminent Dr. Fauci. He showed up for the photo op, lifted his shirt up, long sleeve shirt, on his left arm, flexed his arm out, and the nurse with a mask on, he was wearing a mask, she was wearing a mask and a plastic cover, delivered the jab to Dr. Fauci. At least that's what we were told. And I think soon after he did an interview and he talked about what he experienced, that he had a good night's sleep, no complications or noticeable side effects other than a slight pain in his right arm. Apparently, because he rubbed his right arm when he said it. Now, he said, "I could still feel the pain," and he rubbed his bicep, like that's where the point of injection was, as people who've gotten shots are familiar with that. But he, of course, he rubbed the wrong arm. Maybe this is his way of trolling, starting conspiracy theories. Do you think he got the jab?
No, and it's actually a genre. I've seen lots of videos of doctors, and I think celebrities. I think I saw one of like some supposedly a well-known person, and they don't actually get the jab. If you the YouTube guys have looked at the injection and point out that the person doesn't actually push the button. They put the needle up. It's you can see it next to the skin, and then after a few seconds he pulls it away. And then, but doesn't push the button that would inject something. And it's not just one, there's like four or five of these going around. So Fauci's missing the correct arm is just part of this. It's hard to know what it is. I mean, it'd be easy to do it properly for them to,
Yes, it's like, why
deeply
do that? Yes.
placebo, but they are doing these really kind of clear-cut fake injections of the thing. I don't know what to make of it. I mean, what's more interesting to me is not just that the celebrities are faking it, but that a lot of nurses are saying no to it. There's actually not just one, but several hospitals that have actually publicized this problem, wherein their staff just refuses, or a large fraction of them refuse to take it. It breaks apart the social program that they were trying, where they were trying to vaccinate all of the nurses for a certain kind of, like way of making their patients more safe, but it just didn't work because so many of the nurses said no. I mean, that's really indicative of the success of the independent media. 20 years ago, there wouldn't have been a single person, I think, in America that would have turned out well. There'd been very, very few, but now it's just an enormous number, enormous fraction, and that's really very, very positive. So, the Beast 666 RNA adjusting vaccine is going to have a hard time infecting all of us, I think, Tim.
It's funny. It was at those the same week that Boris Johnson announced this mutant virus in the UK.
Yeah, the mutant ninja turtle virus
Yeah.
that, is again, it's like they, whenever the horror porn needs to, it seems to be wearing off, they can come in with another iteration.
Isn't it based on modeling again? Out of the same
Yeah, and
app.
then that again, and you know, it was funny, it was Niall Ferguson.
Yes.
I mean, can you believe that they would actually use him again as the authority of the mutant ninja turtle virus? I mean, it's just insane, you know, that they would bring this guy back. And his new model was, it is like, I don't know what, it was like 70% more infectious.
Which what does that mean, by the way?
I
Meaning that
have no
you it
idea.
gets around more, but are the people sick? Is it less
I mean,
deadly?
if it has a lethality rate as low as the first one, no, what difference does it make in
Yeah.
terms of the infectious rate? But this was brought out so that they could go to the staged chartreuse lockdown, where you can only go out of your houses, you know, for an hour a day kind of thing. London had that enormous exodus. I don't know if you saw the videos of everyone trying to get the hell out of the city. So London and Paris have been, to some extent, evacuated. I mean, you know, large fractions of the population have just left. They're out in the countryside. It's just an untenable social situation because all of those people are separated from employment. They're separated from their social contacts. I mean, how long can they stay hunkered down in the countryside in what must be, you know, just haphazard, quickly thrown together, you know, kind of places to stay. This is a real ticking time bomb. Hopefully the people in the suburbs who have fled will exchange information, and when they come back into the city, they'll be angry and try to take it over, you know.
And this also allows, politicians like Andrew Cuomo to, to posture again, to pose as a savior. He was he gave a press conference saying he expected Santa to be good to him this year because he'd been such a good boy, fighting the virus, congratulating himself, and but they're restricting people coming from the UK into the States, and I think it was coming out of JFK, people coming from the United Kingdom would be quarantined. At least reportedly. Again, for what? Again, just again, I guess this mutant virus, it's all based on modeling and forecasting, like the original COVID coronavirus, SARS-CoV-2. There is no isolated sample, nor is there a sample of the supposed mutant one, but it, nevertheless, it's being used as justification for continued lockdown, economic warfare, and just to directly shut down Christmas celebrations, and because they don't want the psychological benefit people might get from that, because it's all about, declaring war on the people, the war on populism. But there, there's, of course, there's resistance to some of this. There was an interesting protest out in Oregon. They have a, like many of the mayors, I think it's Kate Brown in Oregon. She's one of these types. She has businesses shut down until, I think, March.
March, yeah.
March, and there's a resistance. There was the state house. The one state senator, Torres Mascoff, declared his independence, calling it all a hoax, which is a good sign. But there's a crowd formed around the state house, I think, and a couple broke in. A few people, protesters, broke past a door that was locked. The security had to use pepper spray, reportedly, and so it got kind of raucous. And of course, if things stay as they are, we can expect more of this as people just, lose it because they have nothing left to lose. And that you're seeing some of that in Oregon now. Of course, the people protesting, they weren't Antifa, they weren't Black Lives Matter protesters. They were, it would appear, if you looked at them, they appeared to be middle class or working class white folk who are not allowed to protest in such a manner. It's not considered acceptable,
Our social status isn't high enough to permit protest.
Yeah, so apparently this was dangerous. Although, again, despite maybe a lock on a door being broken, there was very little property damage. In fact, I think they had some statues that were covered up. There were, I think, spray painted by Antifa protests early in the year that they tore off. They tore off the coverings. But again, what's the governor that they're expecting to happen when you start doing this? They had a mayor there of a small town who said he wasn't going to comply with any lockdown, saying that they've complied with reasonable restrictions, but this is ridiculous, keeping the businesses closed. Of course, the economic destruction that he's decrying is part of the plan. That's one thing I'm still seeing. Some of these pleadings or appeals to these governors to do the right thing. Well, they don't realize that these governors and various officials are doing this, so-called public health officials, they're simply following orders from Davos, and the economic warfare and the destruction that it's creating is part of the plan. So at that point, your protesting is going to have to take it up a couple of notches beyond just mere appeals to these psychopaths.
Yeah, and this is the key point of where we are right now, is that the protests have to move from appeal for government being reasonable to information revolutions informing all of the citizens that the government is malevolent. It's a secret society. You want mayors when they come forward to say, we tried to comply, but it is now clear that the government wants to genocide us. So this is why we're doing what we're going to do. We're not doing this because we hope that the government is going to become more reasonable. We're doing this because we don't trust the government. We think the government is clearly at this point identified as evil, and we want our actions to be inspirational to all of the towns and cities around us who, to do the same thing. The one thing that the mayor did that I really liked is he appealed for other people, other groups, other cities to do the same thing. There should be a whole, he talked about a whole collection of businesses, that should open up at the same time, because that's really what we have to do. We just have to reopen our world and then defend it as best we can. And if enough of us do it, as we have talked about so many times, they can't, past a certain threshold, they have to just give up that particular action against us, because these actions are mainly successful because of high percentage compliance. If you get into like 30, 40% non-compliance, they just don't have enough police and things to lock us down. And moreover, once there was 30%, that would be inspirational, no doubt, and you'd start to see more and more people saying, well, wait a second, they're open, I'm going to open up too.
Yeah, there's a tipping point, a critical mass. I mean, you can't expect, a hero to come in on a white horse to save you on this one. Gary Cooper isn't going to show up at high noon and deal with the bad guys. You're going to have people just simply non-complying, and that's, of course, that's massive civil disobedience. You're just exercising your rights to conduct your business. Saying, show me the evidence, show me the science for this lockdown. That even helps, even if the thing did exist, the actually was a pandemic. There's even no science show that even helps. Even the data that they have show that the vast majority of spreading occurs at the big box stores, the big chains, not at the small restaurants. There's no evidence to suggest that. Yet, nevertheless, you can go shopping at a Costco or a Walmart, but you can't go to your church, or you can't patronize a local business. And it just makes, obviously we're seeing a business model being laid out, and it's destroy small businesses. And at this point, civil disobedience, massive civil disobedience, overwhelm the system, and at the same time encourage a sort of a defection. And we're seeing that a defection among law enforcement community, where they simply no longer enforce these laws, a consciousness that they're on the chopping block as well. If not out of just out of a sense of justice, but also a sense of also self-interest on their part, because the communities that they police are being destroyed. And of course, if you don't have communities you police, you're all to be out of a job as well. But and so and we're seeing evidence of that with many sheriff's departments in these states simply not enforcing these decrees, which are theoretically are enforced, but they're not enforced. So I suspect there's a lot of non-compliance that simply isn't being reported by the media.
I agree. There's a lot of it, and I think again, it's a tipping point. We just have to have so much of it that it just becomes a part of our kind of psychological vernacular. You know what I mean? Where we're always thinking about it, always aware of it. I mean, the main thing that people can do is to be public with the information, loud and public. Whenever there's an opportunity, whenever there's people around you, say, "Hey, brother, hey, sister, you know what? This COVID thing is a government project against us. They're trying to enslave us." Whatever it is that you feel comfortable saying. But here's the way I deal with it is, okay, if I am in a public place and I don't get into a screaming match, I feel like it hasn't been a successful kind of social visit. I mean, if I don't have a confrontation, then it hasn't been successful. I have a new standard for social interaction, which is not exactly making me popular with friends and family, but that's just too bad. I mean, I just feel it's that critical at this point that every opportunity we have, we just have to, to like spread the word, because even if all of the people around you shun you like the body snatcher final scene, where they're pointing at you and like trying to hand you a mask, it doesn't matter, because it's better to have that interaction than to have the interaction where you comply, where you're just intimidated, where you go, well, I'll put the mask on, okay, and I mean, use the opportunities we're given. These are critical times. Use the opportunities. Just say, listen to me, citizens. I have something I have to tell you. Sorry, this whole thing, it's an attempt to enslave us. Because I my opinion is that the people who are in the audience, who listen, whose minds are close to making the step into sunlight, having someone come forward with courage and clear-mindedness and just honest integrity, that really is powerful, and that will move a lot of them from that point where they're in the shadows right now, where they're going, this doesn't seem right, I'm a little worried about this, and then suddenly they can move into the sunlight. It's a transition we have to like help every single American, every single citizen in the world make.
Yeah, I think, well, there's a good portion of the public, perhaps a sizable plurality now, kind of sees a lot of what's going on, are skeptical, and they see it, if not as a hoax, but they see it as stupid, wrongheaded, and destructive. I still don't think they appreciate the enormity of what is occurring around them, and how there's a revolution being occurred, both politically and economically, and they're connected. The same way, that the fake pandemic produced a fake election, and now you have a situation, where perhaps some sort of coup has been orchestrated under the cover of, with under the cover of law, about violating all the laws. But still don't, they think the life will somehow go on to normal, or could be just a little bit different. I think something drastic is on the horizon, and unless their consciousness is raised and there's a resistance to it, there's nothing really going to stop it. And that's, you starts again with the defection of law enforcement, then you have public officials or elected officials calling it out, and then maybe the call for some sort of a criminal investigation into the conspirators, seeing it as indeed a high level metal political conspiracy, among these billionaires, who openly admit it's an open conspiracy at this point. It's on the cover of, they devote an entire edition of Time magazine. Now, it isn't quite as important as it used to be, because who reads Time magazine anymore? But nevertheless, it's being openly admitted. At the same time, it's being denied by the New York Times. So that's, we're with this. So get the word out. Don't comply. Civil disobedience, and perhaps it's, it'll be able to be stopped. With the of course, there is some interesting, the election controversy continues despite, Biden claiming victory in the Electoral College on December 14th. Here we are, the day after Christmas, and there's a lot of several lawsuits. There's of course, the Electoral College produced seven competing or alternative slates of electors. That sets it up on this key date on January 6th, when the electors are read in the Congress. And this is interesting, because now this raises Trump chances. I mean, this raises the issue of they call the Pence card. Mike Pence, of course, the Vice President of the United States and President of the Senate, and he's going to preside over the counting of the electoral votes, which are in dispute. And some people have made this idea that on this joint session that we'll meet to Vice, of course, Vice President will preside as President of the Senate. His power as President of the Senate in this process is plenary, and he has the right to reject them, based on the fact they're invalid. They're out of order. He can deny them. And this is because he can claim that in those seven states, I think seven states that have alternative electors is, if I can have that right, it's New Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia. And he can, f and as I think it's even in dispute, the courts simply in their rejection of the lawsuits, their rejections have all been procedural, have been. So the evidence they haven't looked into the evidence of each case, but there has been enough evidence presented in all those states that those elections violated both the Constitution of the United States and also their respective state laws, meaning legally they weren't elections. They were deficient. So Pence would have the legal and constitutional justification, also the political justification for rejecting those electors, those states from the Electoral College, meaning he would subtract them. So they wouldn't factor in the majority. And if you do that, Trump wins the majority of the valid.
Yeah, like 250 to 230,
It's
that
like
would be
232
close
to 222,
underneath.
I think. And so then in that case, it wouldn't even go into the House of Representatives, meaning where if there was a debate, you know. So if he does that, Trump wins because he wins the majority of the legal Electoral College vote. That's an interesting game to play, and it's from my understanding, it's perfectly constitutional and valid, considering the of course all the evidence that's been amassed since the November 3rd election, albeit it's been rejected or it's been ignored by the courts and by the state legislatures and even by law enforcement because laws have been broken. So that's where we are. It's an interesting thing to ponder, see if it plays out. And my point here is, point out to Republicans or conservatives or people on the right who are calling out the Democrats, the wascally Democrats, for stealing the election. Well, they stole the election fair and square, so to speak. If they win, it's only because the Republicans let them steal it. And that's a question or something that Republicans and conservatives who are still well within the right-left paradigm, the dialectic, have to consider. They're letting them steal it. Now, why is that?
Yeah, that was my favorite lack of standing moment occurred this week. It brought a smile to my face. The Supreme Court, when shown the evidence of the fraud in Pennsylvania, put it on the docket for like 3 days after the inauguration, at which point they would be able to legally take the position it was moot because, well, he's
Yes.
already in office, so it's irrelevant. That was almost comical, and it kind of shows that there really isn't any hope whatsoever in going through SCOTUS. Just forget about that. It's clear at this point, if they want to keep Trump as president, they're going to have to, play the Pence card on January the 6th. I think that if that's actually the plan, which I think is unlikely, I wouldn't be my base case. I think it's, I don't really have any real way of knowing, but I just don't sense that it's about to happen. But if that is the case, if you're going to actually have Pence just say, well, I'm counting the votes, and then Trump won, I think between now and then there would be a constant barrage of real news stories that would have would like basically create the justification. And one reason to think that that's possible would be that they might have been saving this stuff knowing the timing is critical, because really what they would want to do is to bring maximum psychological pressure in terms of the citizenry against the Democrats at exactly the moment that Pence decided to count the votes the way he wanted to. And so you really wouldn't want to shoot your bolt, a month ago in that situation, given the attention span of the American people. You'd really want to be leading up to that exact moment. And Giuliani sort of suggested that this was going to happen. 2 days ago, he said that after Christmas, the fireworks will start. So this could be kind of an interesting period. The idea of dueling inaugurations is not far-fetched at this point.
Especially in the era of social distancing, they don't have to have a big gala celebration. They can justify it.
Yeah, that's right. It would be perfectly, yeah, very politically correct. But I'm a cynic. I'm troubled and think that we might actually just be looking at a psychological pageant that has some intellectual destruction they intend, by the play, by the pageant. They're going to damage us somehow, this is just the pattern that we see in history over and over again. But at the same time, I really would like the Trump to exercise this option, because the idea of, Biden and Harris with taking the knee, wearing the mask, it's just so abhorrent to even think about that. Suddenly Trump looks like someone, it's like the Q theory, like, gee, Trump is a hero at this point. I don't know, Tim. I'm skeptical, but it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks no matter what.
Yeah, we'll see how it plays out. It could all be for nothing. You just go as planned, as scheduled, with Biden being installed with a fraudulent election. Of course, he would enter, under with the I would say almost, odor of corruption, which he'll never be able to shake off. Which is kind of maybe perhaps what they want, because they want sort of an empty head up there, and to pursue the agenda, which is. Which is the Great Reset agenda, which is all
Yeah.
based on the COVID nonsense. There's an interesting scandal out of Germany, and this goes to the basis of the whole pandemic, is the WHO and the Drosten recommended PCR test. How they recommended this is basically it was the results of these tests which laid the groundwork for the lockdown. And because that was the standard test, was to run 45 cycles of amplification, which is well beyond the recommended 25 to 30 cycles. And basically, yes, the Drosten test scandal. The WHO and Drosten recommended a CT of 45 cycles, and reportedly, presently, the German health officials do as well. Little wonder that as the number of the test is ramped up and in the onset of the winter flu season, PCR positives in Germany and elsewhere explode. As the critical authors point out, were the health authorities to specify 35 cycles maximum, the number of corona positive tests would be less than 3% of the present number. I mean, so it would drop 90%.
Yeah, that's right. I've spent just a god amount of time wasted studying this thing, and I would say that any test which is beyond 24 or 25 is meaningless. They're because the rate of false positive is just too high to have any diagnostic meaning. And beyond 35, which is where all of the tests are that with the lockdown is based on, it's just complete madness. There isn't any, and this is why this is. I mean, if you get into if you're in a public confrontation and someone says follow the science, one thing I've had good luck with the normies is to say, look, tell me what the PCR cycle is of the test that has created all of these cases that have give you the idea that we're in some kind of pandemic. What is that? They never know. I say, do you think Newsom knows? Has he given some explanation of that? So just to bring them to the understanding that in fact there is this really critical issue that has never been explained to the public. You see what I mean? It's just a good first step to try to move them a little bit towards sunlight. But that's always, I think that's a really important, if ever you're in a public forum where you have, like an elected representative giving you, kind of a nanny lecture for not being a good citizen and not following the science, you always hit them with that one. Is say, what is the cycle number of the PCR test you're giving? Because he won't know, obviously. And that will expose the fact that this isn't science. I mean, it is scientism. It's just the illusion of following people who claim to be, like no more. But when your elected representatives don't have even a clue what the cycle means and how critical it is, then you've exposed them very quickly, very neatly, And hopefully you get an advantage in that opportunity, you know, to like get more people who are listening to move from that shadow period into the light.
You see that because they claim science as this hard science, it's objective. They can, you know, you can demonstrate it, it's falsifiable, but the more you look into it, their science is just a sort of sophistry and mysticism wrapped, you know. And you got that with Fauci when he admitted that he was lying or manipulating the idea of herd immunity to build the case for the vaccine. He's saying, you know, it has to be a certain level, and he claimed that he was exaggerating just to build a public argument for a vaccine, so he admitted the lying to the public. The same way he in the New England Journal of Medicine, he wrote that the COVID-19 would have the same death rate of flu, 0.1%, and but then on television he said it was going to be more like 1% or above, 1 to 3%, more than 10 times. So he contradicts himself, you know, playing to the audience for political reasons, and that's how people look at it. You know, these are politicians, bureaucratic schemers, shills for a malevolent billionaire class, multi-billionaire class. You know, the who are just paid to say things to market the products that the billionaires are peddling to the public using false information and coercion, the state. And, you know, that's a public-private partnership. You know,
Yeah.
and that kind of gets us into the idea of this whole notion of the Great Reset that they presume to be able to impose on humanity to save us. Okay, so, yeah, this idea, this Great Reset. I mean, it's what we have is the great, you know, the pandemic, declared pandemic, is basically it's a pretext for this all. I mean, they were trying to initiate the same emergencies with environmental hysteria, and couldn't seem to get any traction with the public. It was perhaps the period of fear was too extended, so it allowed itself exposed to criticism and critique, you know, like the climate, the whole scandal at East Anglia University, the whole idea of the hockey stick controversy, where they in order to show long term or a dramatic increase in temperatures in the 20th century, they did away with the medieval warming period, and so people became skeptical. Idea of CO2 or something more aligned as being a deadly, you know, earth killing gas or something, you know. And so it just didn't work, wasn't getting any traction. You had the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab last year, just in the summer and fall, pushing, you know, promoting that girl, Thunberg, out of Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, this hysteria, sort of this would-be Joan of Arc of the Green Movement. But it didn't seem to work. But then you had this declared pandemic. And then initially, of course, they had this Great Reset plan going into it, and you know, this Great Reset plan is, you know, the it treated the COVID-19 pandemic as a triggering crisis, and for this plan, and you know, they came out with all this kind of rhetoric. I think they said something like that. The Klaus Schwab said that the world as we know it in the early months of 2020 is no more. These radical changes would create a new normal. We saw a lot of, I mean, politicians around the world who's speaking multiple languages uttering these phrases, the new normal, build back better, in their own respective languages, like you're reading from a script. And they, you know, there was basically, it was a world transformed. Many of our beliefs will be transformed. Assumptions about what the world could and should look like will be shattered in the process. And because all this goes back to this pandemic, which is based on these false PCR tests, they can't even demonstrate an increase in the mortality or morbidity rates. So what's there to be alarmed at? But they're pushing this fear, and basically they use all this, you know, they employ this technocratic psychobabble to announce the pandemic that's already transforming the world. It's a fait accompli. We can't do anything about it. You know, it's happened. What are we going to do? And of course, what's the Great Reset? It's basically changing the entire global economy, taking the current capitalist system, as they call it, and restructuring into, I think they call it stakeholder system or something, these terms, where we
Yeah,
don't
that's
own anything anymore. Everything's sort of collectivized, a very, you know, and apparently no one owns anything anymore, but we rent it. We don't whole industries will go away. They're doing that, with the small businesses. Of course, the question is, if no one owns it, then who does it? Who owns it? Well, we know the answer to that. And so basically, it's a neo-feudalistic order that they're trying to impose, using the pandemic as a pretext. As we can see, there's nothing really unique out there. There is no pandemic. There is no great, virus that's going to wipe out humanity unless we listen to their dictates and follow their orders. But nevertheless, we did see with the great what they the idea of a reset, a problem is that there, while the problems they say aren't the problems that really confront humanity, nor should we follow their remedies or their plans to address the problems. There is a problem. There was a problem going into 2020 with the global economy, the world economic system. But they're the ones that put it together. Under the first there was a Bretton Woods system, and then there was the petrodollar system, and now the fiat dollar system. And it's an economic system which they have intentionally run into the ground with their fractional reserve banking system, debt-based economies. The centralized, warfare model with the central banking system, which they control. Nevertheless, they control it all. But then, when they run into the ground, they're the ones who should be, who they think they're the ones who should design the new system. So it isn't surprising the new system doesn't serve the interest of humanity too well, and serves their very narrow interests. And of course, that's the idea of this great reset. Well, they buy up all the world's resources and, in a sense, rent them to us. At the same time, doing away with things like currency. But it does raise the question: is what type of system, given the fact that the system itself is inherently unstable, what type of system should we have in terms of economics and even political reform? What should be reset or reformed or changed? I think the answer lies in there's a lot of things that did work in the past. We could go back to that. So we don't it doesn't have to be new and innovative. We can just go back to basics or go back to our roots. And I think Neil Postman has a book called something like the Bridge to the 18th Century. The late Neil Postman, meaning instead of looking forward, maybe look for the past for some answers. Maybe the problem is modernism itself, and the political structures we created. Maybe the state itself is too big. These big mega states, particularly the United States, and political reform in the United States might stress maybe decentralization or some sort of secession, where we revert to a more central, a decentralized approach and regions, and we reject sort of the globalist model. But that's a big, that's a big thing to bite off and try to chew. But nevertheless, it should be considered given the current dilemma that humanity is facing. So where'd you want to go start with that?
Well, I mean, I would the first thing I would do is I would tell Klaus Schwab, how do you pronounce his last name anyway?
Schwab.
I mean, I cannot get that right. Anyway, Klaus, I would just say, Klaus, I love your idea about no one owning anything. And the first group that will step forward into this brave new world will be the central banking families.
Yes.
Because all they have to do is give up their ownership of this these bizarre central banks, and you'll see that this workers' paradise you're talking about, man, it's going to be coming right around the corner. Because the most central apparatus that they use to enslave us and to make us miserable is this little bamboozling trick that they have been playing on us since, well, at different times in history, but certainly since 1917, when they really started the central banks in the United States doing this, is they create debt in the nation, which has to somehow be given, people coming forward to buy these bonds that the nation will issue. Now, the only people with enough money are these banks who don't actually have any money, but they can borrow it at what's called the, discount window, which is a tribe-owned entity where these central banks like Goldman Sachs and, the Warburg family banks, I mean, they can borrow the money at less than the government is going to pay them back for the money that they borrowed. Now, this little bamboozling aspect is what creates all the destruction of our economy, of our currency. It's what's led to the idea of to the fact of, a man and a woman who are married have to both work so much they can't have children, right? It's because the currency just can't do what it's supposed to do because there's so much of it being made and it's being then controlled in a way where the debt just gets bigger and bigger. But the bigger it gets, that little bamboozling calculation just provides more and more money for the banking families. I mean, this is the central bamboozling aspect of our world that has to be changed.
Yeah, because
Because
economics is upstream from culture, and culture is upstream from politics. And they use that economic clout or leverage to change the culture through propaganda, mind control, entertainment, this stuff. And then that changes the culture. Where a good example is that just the macroeconomic effect of being manipulated the currency with debt inflation, where no longer one paycheck can support a family. So a man and a woman, assuming they get married, but they both have to work. They may be able to have a kid or a second child, but they're in daycare and school, and then they're being educated in school and also in entertainment. There's no necessarily isn't such thing as a man and a woman, so that generation doesn't even bother to get married and have kids. So
And
that's the
that's
process,
and that's and so the whole US Treasury debt market is mind control. It is just mind control. It is just saying, we're going to create a situation where we're going to let the special tribe borrow, invent money, which they supposed to pay back at 1%. So this gives it the illusion of being like a financial transaction. But the US will then pay them back at 3%. And that 2% difference, well, that's just going to be debt that the US, meaning you and me, Tim, and everybody else, is going to have to come up with every single year in order to just keep stuffing money into the central banking family's coffers.
And that's compounded.
And that's compounded every single year. So
By the way,
if
you mentioned 1917. Sorry, when the Federal Reserve started really stretching its legs, because of course it's created in December 1913, it opens up December in 1914. But of course, that's America's entry into the First World War. And the original plan of the Federal Reserve was I think the 12 regional banks would be in a time of liquidity crisis at a bank, is they would use corporate paper to expand the money supply to smooth over a crisis, sort of the way that J.P. Morgan functioned in the 1907 Knickerbocker Trust crisis, meaning a consortium of banks got together, provided liquidity to prevent the run, to stop the run on the banks.
Just it
But
was a workers' paradise illusion trick where they had this threat where the liquidity would dry up, the banking system would freeze up, and JP Morgan had to heroically step in this
step in
one
and
time.
do it,
So why
yes.
don't we just give this power to these central banks because they're such good people, and they will then be able to make sure that we never have that liquidity crisis again because they can simply create credit to whatever degree that they want. Through this discount window maneuver, which now has basically eaten the world.
But the war itself, America's entry into the war, of course, largely brought about by Zionist interests working with the British Empire, that created the necessity as an emergency measure that the Federal Reserve was now going to monetize government debt to pay for the
Exactly. So
war.
17 is why I use that date, not 13,
And
because
by the way, I
17.
think we haven't paid off the World War I debt yet.
Nor will we ever because it's compound
It's
interest and
compounded. So.
yeah, we'll never be paid off. So the thing is that for over 100 years, this maneuver is being done against us. And if you want to get to a world where there is you don't no one owns anything, well, the first group that has to give up ownership is the central banking families of this of these so-called central banks, which have this amazing power of discount window purchasing. And Tim, as I've said before, the first step to a world where we can look to the future with real optimism would be for a US president to stand up and say, I've just ordered the Treasury to give me a $25 trillion coin, and with it I'm buying all of our debt.
Yes.
More interest, it's all gone. The coin I'm giving you, there it is. Good luck. And now, henceforth, whenever we need debt, all of the ownership of the interest will be the people. That's that simple. The Treasury will simply own 100% because when the nation creates the debt, It is no there, and we also create the currency that's paying a debt back. There's no reason for us to pay interest on it. It's just insane. So we just don't. If there is interest, like people need a mortgage, okay, interest concept is not a bad one. I wouldn't do compound interest, but certainly, okay, reasonable idea of a bank lending out money and having, there being a way to make profit. But interest on the national debt, that belongs to the people. That's our money. And so that would be the first thing that we would, in my opinion, we would do is we would just end the monopoly on credit creation that the Zionist banking families have created.
Yeah, the that's interesting because the use of debt as sort of a leverage or a weapon, a part of the Great Reset, at least what's been leaked out, is the idea that there'd be a great debt reset where in the process to deal in a way to deal with the financial calamity or crisis, brought about by the pandemic. No, there was a pretext. They shut the economy down to cover for the collapse of the repo market late last year, and then to justify a $6 trillion bailout of Wall Street. But nevertheless, there's this plan afoot that apparently they're going to offer everyone who's been unemployed and desperate have all their debt wiped away, but they have to renounce all ownership of property. So here you have a situation where you have a banking system, a banking cabal, that issues loans on money they create out of thin air to gain to loan to people, and then the real property is collateral, and then eventually when people can't pay it back, they foreclose. So basically they're acquiring real property, real wealth for money they create out of thin air. And so their solution is sort of this typical structural adjustment program you see with the IMF or World Bank or some of these third world countries where they impose debt on a country, and then when the debt can't pay, the country can't pay the debt back. They seize real assets and take over companies or get claim to resources on the cheap from that country, and it seems a
Exactly.
similar plan is afoot in the
Yeah, no,
West.
that's so well said. I'm really glad you brought that up because basically what's happening in broad stroke is vulture capitalism
Yes.
being applied to the American people.
Yeah, and it's right. Yeah, it's like, well, you can say it's karma because you let them. They've been letting people get away with this, but again, these issues, these things aren't really explained to the American public, about how it works. Most people don't understand the dollar itself.
It's the
It's
opposite. Yeah. In other words, what they explain is something that confuses people so they can't think clearly. That's
yeah.
the explanation.
Well, even now, is they're debating $600 relief checks or $2,000 relief checks.
It's just
This is
hilarious.
money that just created out of thin air. Like, where did they get this? They're just borrowing it, and then they're going to give it to the people, and the people you're getting the money to, they're going to have to pay that back with interest. But then what's saying, well, instead of cashing out relief checks, let people go back to work.
Well, that's exactly right. And that's that you can see how they distract. And this is not circumstance. These things are not occurring, by, like history unfolding, and Pelosi and Trump are struggling over, who's going to give the bigger relief check. Tim, this is all a theater. This is a theater.
Well,
They're
for one thing,
are
it's getting
distracting
people
us from
conditioned to
they're
accept it.
distracting us from exactly what you said. They don't want us to ask the simple question of, well, if we're having all these financial troubles, why don't we just reopen the economy?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Rand
That's
Paul said that. Rand Paul, the senator, Rand Paul said he's going after the governors. He's saying these governors are tyrannical. They're shutting down businesses. His state, Kentucky, he says, is worse than New York. If they're preventing people from going to church. People's rights are being basic constitutional rights are being violated. They're being prevented being able to earn a living, and no one has. So I mean, and he says the big problem is that the CARES Act provided relief for states to do this. So the state governments are getting relief funding from the federal government to impose this tyrannical lockdown to prevent the economy from functioning properly, their local economies functioning, only because the state governments, as long as they keep an emergency going, they get the federal money. It's perverse, but
Well,
I, it,
it's well designed. It's an
yes.
obvious system of enslavement.
And you're getting
And
people conditioned to accept the idea of, relief and universal basic income and not working, but the thing about debt's interesting because the whole idea of how debt's created to loan money out, there was a how one thing you could change that system is one thing is if you're going to have people borrowing money, they should be borrowing from actual reserves, not money created out of thin air. But that would deny the banking system the money multiplier effect, which relies on the rollover debt and compound the interest and keep, sucking the blood out of the workers for multi generations. But there's a book called Behind the Curtain by John Hamer, and he talks about how there was a court case that exposed how the system worked. Of course, it's been ignored. The precedent hasn't been able to be used. But there was in December 1968, there was a landmark court case in Credit River, Minnesota, United States. It was the First National Bank of Montgomery versus Daly, where in the courtroom, not widely reported either, at the time was an extremely significant event. Jerome Daly, a lawyer by profession, defended himself against the bank's attempted foreclosure on his $14,000 mortgage on the grounds that there was no consideration for the loan. Consideration legalese refers to the item exchanged and is an essential element of any legal contract. Daly contended that the bank offered no consideration for his loan on the grounds that they had created the money out of thin air by bookkeeping entry and had therefore not suffered a loss by his refusal or inability to pay back the money. The proceedings were recorded by Justice William Drexler, who had given no credence whatsoever to the defense until Mr. Morgan, the bank's president, took to the witness stand. To Drexler's and indeed everyone else present's great surprise, Morgan casually admitted under questioning from Daly's lawyer that the bank routinely created money out of thin air and for all its loans and mortgages, that this indeed was standard practice in all banks. Presiding Justice Martin Mahoney declared that it sounds exactly like fraud to me, accompanied by nods and murmurs of assent all around the courtroom. In a summation of the case, Justice Mahoney reported that plaintiff admitted that it, in combination with the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis, did create the entire $14,000 in money and credit upon its own books by bookkeeping entry, that this was the consideration used to support the note dated May 8, 1964, and the mortgage of the same date. The money and credit first came into existence when they created it. Morgan admitted that no United States law or statute existed, which gave him the right to do this. A lawful consideration must exist and be tendered to support the note. So the court duly rejected the bank's claim of foreclosure, and the defendant kept his house. The implications of this case, therefore, should have been far-reaching. If bankers are indeed extending credit without consideration, which they most definitely are, i.e., without backing their loans with real money they actually have stored in their vaults and were entitled to lend, any judicial decision declaring their loans void would topple the entire worldwide financial banking system. Since this precedent and many other defendants have attempted to have mortgages and loans nullified using the same defense as Daly, but there has been extremely limited success. Only, in fact, one judge said strictly off the record, if I let you do this, you and everyone else, it would bring down the whole banking system. I cannot let you go behind the bar of the bank. We're not going behind that curtain." So, again, it gets exposed as
It's very straightforward, and of course the system cannot stand any scrutiny.
No.
Can't, I mean, it is amazing to me how little understanding of the central banking function and evil is in the hands of the public. I'll give you an example. A friend of mine had a discussion with his uncle about the COVID relief, government largesse that's being created, this huge amount of money. And this individual, his uncle, asked him, he said, "Are they selling their gold to get the money?" And that was a serious question from a, an American adult who's lived his whole life, and he actually thought that that was something that was possible. So the public, has been dumbed down systematically in terms of economic things. I mean, it's really what has happened is that they've developed a kind of technology of a world of finance that has all kinds of, apparatus and complex movement and things, which they have created, and so they can understand. But the public has we have never entered into that world, so it all looks so confusing and complex, and we just accept the fact that, we get poorer and poorer. But the right approach is just to say, this is all nonsense. This is just bamboozlement. The bankers should all, I mean, in this theoretically sane world, they should all be arrested. Seriously, because this is just, very, very evil activity. They know perfectly well what they're doing. These guys should be arrested. It is treason what they've done. It should be a capital charge against them in any case. And this would be, Merry Christmas. This would be like a step toward a really sane world. And it would really be the right approach to go to Klaus Schwab with when he talks about non-ownership, because it is a certain group's ownership and control of the vast majority of this critical aspect of what we can call capitalism that has led to this catastrophe wherein we're really unable, we're having a very difficult time fighting back against something as obviously evil as this lockdown. People are poor. They're going to accept and wait for the $2,000 check because they don't have the wherewithal, the independence that I think Americans would have had toward the end of the 19th century.
Yeah, and one way to reset this, or at least compensate those who have been hurt by the lockdown that was imposed indirectly by the World Economic Forum, they gave the orders to their constituent governments that they control largely through debt, the debt mechanism, would be rather than passing, a relief bill with offering $150 billion in relief checks. And then $800 billion in foreign aid and scams is what the original bill was, paying for a border wall in Syria or
Oh, it's
Jordan or
just
something,
stupid.
corporate welfare and all that stuff. But also, it's also part of that relief bill was paying for advertising for the vaccines. I love that. In that 55, hidden within the 5,500 pages that no one read. The idea is, and I've floated this idea, instead of another relief bill that's paid with money out of thin air and borrowed at interest, is you simply impose a tax on the billionaire class, the people that made money at the past since last March. You've heard their wealth increased by 35%, trillion close to $1 trillion made since then, and they've profited mightily off the destruction of Main Street. And instead of creating money, you just take that and tax them and compensate those who you simply go by with their tax filings of the previous year and whatever their annual earnings were, and minus what they haven't earned this year, you write them a check. And same with the local businesses. And that would probably come out to be close to probably less than $1 trillion, at least in the United States. But that's what you do. And that's not inflationary. It's just
No, of
redistributing the
course
wealth
not.
back where it belongs, because the money they've earned this year is because they shut the economy down.
Yeah, I think that they're clever. They hide the money so you don't really see it as income. It would be in, in trusts. I mean, Gates has his money in these trusts he controls so that he can basically grow it into infinity and not pay any tax on it.
Well, another great reset would be repealing idea of corporate personhood,
Oh, sure, of course. I mean, all of these, look,
these
all the whole
privileges
legal
that,
system and the financial system are a slave creating system. I mean, that's what they are. And they get Americans to defend them, as some kind of historical freedom of Americans, that we have the, like this one guy was arguing with was saying, well, at least the banks are in the private sector. In other words, he was arguing that it was the idea of like the people owning the whatever interest was on our currency. He goes, no, that isn't the private sector. The idea that he and the Rothschilds sit down and have brunch, and I mean, this was just someone who had no power in life and was just a fool. But this is how they bamboozled us with all of these concepts and stuff. So we don't, I really think it's almost like irrelevant. We don't really need to waste time learning about this system. What we need to do is come up with the political will just to get rid of it.
Well, the problem is you can't look at it private versus public. The World Economic Forum itself is a public-private partnership,
Sure.
and you can see that the people that attend that it's politicians, it's people in the media, these corporations, and the revolving doors, and they rig the system. Good example of how that works. If you just take apart the Gates network, is how he establishes a tax-free foundation to hide his profits from Microsoft. He shovels it into this tax-free foundation, then pays himself and his associates, from that. So he doesn't have to pay the 35% tax on it. And I'm not necessarily a defender of high capital gains taxes. I don't think that's the solution either, tax on capital. But I'm saying this is how they get around those. Everyone else has to pay those taxes. The few rich don't. But and then he sets up this supposedly benevolent philanthropic foundation that's non-profit, of course. But then he sets this foundation to work, rigging the system that's buying off the World Health Organization. So the World Health Organization, or he donates money to the Imperial College of London or to Johns Hopkins, and they create a network of information. Well, they will rig the system, PR, media, where they change the political environment. They change the perceptions of reality, like a false pandemic, where policies are twisted to benefit various industries that they have invested in, whether it's NG, genetically modified foods or the pharmaceutical industry. Obviously, they're making a lot of money off the perceived need for vaccines. The same way that in 2009, the World Health Organization was manipulated to declare a false pandemic with the swine flu so they could sell hundreds of billions of dollars of vaccines that otherwise would have decayed on the shelf. And so, again, when you make the decision public and private, no, that doesn't exist anymore. It's over. It's been corporatized anyway.
Yeah, just the it's just a concept that they use for bamboozlement. You know, it's I mean, Gates's charity network is just a great example. People should really try to understand a little bit about that, because you can see that he creates these trusts that are outside of the tax system. They have a legal designation as a charity, and then he uses all of the money to manipulate the world into the condition that he wants. And so that's his charity. So he doesn't pay tax. He has more money than for malevolence. And this is under the auspice of humanitarian and taxation, which is why one really funny statistic is that since he gave all of his money away, he's like made something like $800 billion.
Explain to me the math on that. Yeah, how do you
Yeah,
do that?
I mean, it's just hilarious, you know, like so the charity of the oligarchs has always been just a camouflage for evil and for enslavement. I mean, think of the Rockefeller, you know, Foundation and what it was able then to do to, you know, natural medicine. I mean,
Well,
so.
that's why the Rockefellers maneuvered went from energy into banking and medicine, and now they've come back where, with banking you control the flow of credit, the creation of money, and you can control a lot of things from that. There's political, like again, economics is upstream from culture, and culture is upstream from politics. So you control the economics, you control the culture, you control the politics. But now they're looking at it as well with, and this goes to technocracy, and this is why they picked up the technocracy, this crank idea in the 30s with, King Hubbard and Howard Scott, who was a fraud and exposed as such. But they picked up this idea, I think, maybe in the 60s and 70s when Rockefeller hired Brzezinski and his Between Two Ages book. Is with technocracy, they like the idea of a resource-based economy, because then with a resource-based economy, which they now see as feasible with 5G and technology with modern and control, now they see it as feasible. They've really accelerated it. Prior to that, they had a problem with information and control. Now with the internet and these things, they think with they've solved their cybernetic problems. They can control and manage people now. And they can, so much so with nanotechnology, they think they can harvest energy that you create with your body. That's how perverse it is. But and they actually think in this way. When Klaus Schwab talks about the integration with man and machine and these things, like, this Luciferian weird idea of whatever. But it's saying the idea is that there is now with reason why these oligarchs have taken up technocracy. No, it's no longer capitalism versus communism. And the dialectic they controlled in the 20th century, 21st century, they've revitalized technocracy because technocracy is a pretext for controlling all the resources. And once you control the manage the resources, you no longer have to control the money. So they introduce the idea of digital currency. And the process of how you introduce that is you simply create a currency crisis by inflating it away, destroying its value. And that's what you're saying now. with the explosion of debt. At the same time, they're exploding debt, they're suppressing economic activity. I mean, that's not a good combination because
Right. And
obviously you're going to have an inflationary crisis at some point.
they foreshadowed all of this and set up the structure with Bitcoin and all the
Yes.
virtual so they're well aware of of the future beyond the dollar.
But didn't Bitcoin, isn't there some idea that Bitcoin originated with the National Security Agency?
Yeah, I mean there is an idea. In fact, I would say that's probably the best explanation. I mean, whenever you see something like this, which is a, has the cover story of independence, but then you cannot vet, you cannot get inside and look at the, like who are the people doing it when it has this sort of, well, we can't really reveal identification, then you really have to suspect automatically you're dealing with an operation. I mean, it just seems to me that's self-evident. And here, particularly where, the timing of it was, you could see the that there was going to be an eclipse, an end to all of the fiat currency. In fact, that was kind of the justification for it, is that here is a, it's a currency which has a non-counterparty risk. But this was ludicrous because since no one knows who was creating it, the idea that it is non-counterparty is just preposterous. I mean, no one knows if there is a counterparty risk to it. No one knows who anything at all, about the origin
Yeah.
whatsoever. So anyway, the future is simply what the plan is to create digital currency, that we all would have just digital currency. And the whole purpose for that, Tim, is obvious, right? It's just they can monitor.
Yes.
Mean, when you have physical cash, you have freedom. You can spend your money where you want, and no one knows if you spend it and what you spend it on. When you have digital currency, when they transition to digital currency, trust me, it isn't going to be, for our benefit. It's so that they can monitor what we buy, and then they can they since they will control the flow of the currency. Remember, when you have a Bitcoin, you're relying on a whole electronic system that you have no control over.
Yes.
Very different from holding a dollar in your hand. When you have digital currency, then you have the controllers of the digital currency having a kind of dictatorship over all of your economic activity. And so this is obviously the plan here, is that they're going to have this social credit system wherein your behavior will also be part of your ability to access your money. So it has to be resisted just with everything we've got, because to succumb to the system, to accept it, would to be putting power in the hands of this mysterious secret society, just like the technologic wherewithal that creates Bitcoin, that the average citizen doesn't have a clue about. We don't know who they are, what they are, why are we, who, how can you trust them? That kind of a situation has to be resisted with life and death. We just have to absolutely not let this be brought about, because it's just one, it's really one of the last steps to that complete slave state wherein all of our movement, all of our economic activity, and then, of course, even our genetics will be monitored and controlled, by the oligarchs.
Yes, yeah, and of course we see that with the supposedly, possibly with the introduction of the mRNA vaccine, where it's a genetic, modifying.
Yeah,
It's not even a
for sure.
vaccine in the classical sense, even if you buy into that paradigm. But another thing is all the spending is, they can raise 900 billion here, a trillion here. Why do they bother with income tax?
Well, there's no reason at this point. I mean, I think, I mean,
The
particularly since
federal
so
income
much of
tax,
the income tax is taxing, capital gains that occur from the manufacturing of money out of thin air.
yeah.
I mean, have you ever seen any of these analysis, which shows that the actual real economic activity from which the taxation could come is just a tiny fraction of what the government spends every year? I mean, we've discussed this many times. Fiat currency is just a form of mind control. It's just the belief that there is a value. And once they've got that mind control in place, they don't really have to do anything to keep the any real value to the currency. Because what they have are people who will believe in it. So as long as we believe that the dollar is valuable, it will be valuable. But it doesn't have any intrinsic value. It's just this is just our, what they have led us to, and you know, to so they can control us.
Now, as far as what we're also saying is with the United States and larger states is we have this election controversy debacle, if you will, is that there's a move towards secession and decentralization, which I can see easily being manipulated. Some people say that this is the way to sort of dissolve the United States, and that way the oligarchs get out from under their obligations, like with pension systems and Social Security. You dissolve the United States. That's an interesting argument to trick, get out from under their obligations. But nevertheless, the idea of a state with 330 million souls being governed from a from a isolated remote capital on the eastern seaboard of the United States, given the extent that the federal government presumes to control so much, control everything, it is something unworkable. We're seeing it play out now because we do have regions of the country. You see, if you see the electoral map, blue versus red, I mean, it's really divided. There's a few purple in there, I suppose, but you have basically the East Coast and the West Coast and everything in between being forced to live under the same rules, and especially given the number of rules that the federal government has seemed fit to impose in the past 100 years, the managerial revolution with the New Deal and the Cold War and these things and the world wars is perhaps some reconsideration or reevaluation of what an ideal political system should be. We've seen with the presidential elections what a absurdity they are, $1 trillion elections and hundreds of millions of people voting that's subject to all types of fraud. Perhaps if we reverted to a previous way presidents were elected, like in the 19th century when you had electoral college selected by the state legislatures, which of course is more representative and more in tune with their voters. And if sort of a de facto decentralization, if not secession, where I think this is being floated in Texas. Texas is big enough to be its own state. 30 million people live in the state of Texas. And you see in your own state, California, the people in the north are very different from the people in the south. Why should they be forced to live under the same polity, especially given the fact that those in charge f seem fit to be waging bio warfare with sort of using mass migration of peoples and to more or less gerrymander districts and create a confusion with the voting systems. We can't rely on the reliability of elections. That some reevaluation has to be made about states in general, but in the United States, perhaps a breakdown to regionalism where the governments there, reflect the values and interests of the people rather than the swamp in D.C., which is just this small, very group of people who are attached to the oligarchic class, which seem to be carrying out a global carpetbagging operation.
Yeah, and a global genocide of the citizens. So I mean, it would be a great idea to like get out from under their control. I was asked this like a while ago, like, well, what would a real citizen be at this point? And it was a good question, and particularly in the context of the particular discussion. And I said, I said I think that the first thing you'd have to do to be a real citizen would be to bring in a scalp of an oligarch. Because the point is, I mean, not advocating bias, it's
Metaphorically.
a figure of speech, but my point is that as long as you're inside the mental control, you can't really function as a real citizen. I had a screaming one of my screaming matches, and I was just trying to give, actually, I wasn't screaming at this point. I was just talking about the data, relating to COVID. And the woman, after a while, she said, "You sound like Trump." And I said, "Really?" I said, "Trump talks about the statistics of COVID. Have you ever heard it?" I mean, but I realized, this is just a completely thought puppet person, right? And so this is the, kind of the point I would make about elections, is that if you're still in the world of the thought puppet, you really shouldn't be voting because you're just going to reflect the oligarchs. I know this is, people will take this the wrong way and think it's elitism or you're cutting people off, but the fact of the matter is they honestly, most of the American people honestly cannot make a real decision, about politics because they haven't moved into the sunlight. They just don't see the evil that's controlling them.
Well, they're still in the cave.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
Okay. Watching shadows on the wall. I mean,
seeing the shadows. And so they really shouldn't. They really, if they were honest, they would simply admit this and then not even participate until they had done enough research to make a coherent decision. And by that, Tim, all I mean is they would try to vote in people who would actually represent them. Because the way it is now, there's so much confusion and bamboozlement that we are just trained into bringing people into office like Nancy Pelosi or Bill Clinton, you know, people like, you know, the whole like political class is a secret society of evil. And until the citizenry can make that discernment, you know, and they can go, nah, this guy just doesn't look right. They should not even worry about voting. They have bigger problems. I have said for some time, you know, you've heard me say it many times, we need to get a DNA database of all of these people who run for office, because even though it's not a perfect indicator, at least we want to know, for example, that like Bill Clinton isn't a member of the, you know, Rothschild family.
He isn't an illegitimate son of a Rockefeller or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, yes. What I mean is that these would be really significant indications of whether or not the person you're voting for has your interests as opposed to the oligarch interest. So until we are there technologically, we have that kind of control, and until we are as a group of citizens, I mean, democracy is just going to basically be cutting our nose off to spite our face. As hopefully the information revolution will, you know, continue to grow and even quicken, you know, in development, and we'll start to develop new ideas about democracy and about, well, what can we really do to make our world better, to make our political class represent us and not just them.
Yeah, I mean, I was interviewed a while back at Donald Jeffries, and I heard him on it. Actually, I heard him on another interview, not my interview, but he said that he's talking about the elections, and he said people hate Donald Trump for the things he never did, and people love Donald Trump for the things he never did. You know, and that's politics, and it's theater, yeah. And this isn't. I mean, I understand that because he represents what he represents, right? What he, in the eyes of people, populism, and that's dangerous enough. And so we talk about this election debacle and the way Donald Trump can win. It isn't out of enthusiasm for Donald Trump, really. It's the acknowledgement that the plan is somehow to install Biden and seeing Donald Trump challenging it as sort of an incremental victory. But obviously, Donald Trump isn't the savior. I mean, he's out there. He presided over the lockdown. He imposed the emergency, state of emergency, which justified the lockdowns. His Justice Department and his Department of Homeland Security failed to protect the country from the rioters and the protesters of the summer. It didn't open up the states. An aggressive assertion of the 14th Amendment could have opened up all the states and called out for the governors for the tyrants that they are. If you're going to have the federal government presuming to oversee the states and make sure that they do protect people's rights, that's what the 14th Amendment supposedly does. You know, why not impose it? Why not, assert it or invoke it for that? You know, I've said, you know, if they can send troops to integrate a public high school in Alabama or Arkansas, or, you know, why can't they enforce, you know, keep government, make governors respect their state constitutions and the federal constitution? Didn't do that. And of course, then you also have warp speed, and then the Trump administration is charging hard on this awful, you know, experimental vaccine. Is that 4D chess? I don't know. Nevertheless, it shows that, you know, obviously the current electoral system, you know, is dysfunctional. And of course, that reflects a dysfunctional political system and a dysfunctional culture, because it's just too wide, it's too big, it's too centralized and too corrupt. And some sort of economic reset will have to be rely on some sort of political reset, where it returns or reverts to a more normal system, something that's more on a more human scale, you know. And sure. Unfortunately, some collapse is going to have to be necessary for that. and unfortunately probably a lot of suffering. It'd be nice if people could rationally discuss these things, say it ain't working, let's have a divorce, part our ways, let's maintain some connections, you know, sort of maybe under the original idea as advertised, where you had a system that was basically was a common market and a mutual defense pact, but nothing more ambitious than that, and let the states work it out and let the regions work it out the way they want. But the problem is the system itself that was designed, even going back to the colonial period, the revolutionary period, is the system they decide there was always an oligarchic class, or at least a class that an aspiring oligarchic class that had these connections to the banking systems of England and these things, which from the get-go conspired to construct a very system that which is now so burdens us. You know, it was sort of inevitable given the whole nature of the system, you know.
Yeah, look at what Washington is wearing when he's being inaugurated as
Yeah.
president. I mean, he's got the Mason's apron on. At that point, the masonry wasn't really that
And even
exposed.
Hamilton, right? Hamilton concocted that whole bond swindle, you know, with the end
Yeah,
up, which sparked
exactly.
the Whiskey Rebellion. You know, it
Yeah,
was a
so
bond swindle.
to be effective citizens, to
Yeah.
represent ourselves, we've got to get out of this kind of like belief in the dialectics, that they give us all this stuff. But they're so effective. I was going to say, like, this whole thing with Trump and Biden. I mean, I know, Tim. I mean, I know all the way down into the tips of my toes that it's just theater. I know it's theater. It's just ridiculous. But it is so effective. It's like my favorite TV show. And I'm truly, truly rooting for Trump. I mean, I cannot believe this, but I actually am just. And it's because they have done such a great job in establishing Trump as sort of the white male
Yes.
representative, and Biden is taking a knee to Antifa, and with Harris, of course, is just a moral degenerate.
Yes.
It's just these dialectic components are so effective that they really have gotten to me, and I am literally like, and of course, just because I want to talk about it later on, but I actually pay attention to it. I mean, oh my God, they've turned this down in the Supreme Court. This is very upsetting. But it's all just, conditioning. It's all just my growing up in the United States and having been trained into belief in the dialectic. We want to break free of this stuff. We have to realize that the dialectic they give us, and by that I just mean this, Democrat, Republican, or commie, capitalist, that these things are just, these are just mind control elements. And so to really have a clear mind, you just got to get free of those things. And I mean, I'll tell you though, it's this is a, they've really done a great job with the Biden Trump dialectic. It's like it's just impossible for me to not be engaged in the thing. And it's fascinating kind of to sit back and watch my poor mind have these psychological constructions take place, even though I know perfectly well, hey, I've been conditioned, but it's, this is how effective it is, and this is, how bold and kind of forward-looking and courageous we have to be, to get out of it, to get out of our comfort zones. Because part of the comfort zones is the good old-fashioned, dialectics that everyone believes in. Got to get out of that stuff. That stuff didn't help us at all. We have to get into a different way of looking at ourselves,
Yeah, and it's kind of like if you point out that, you know, whether they're violating the election laws is unconstitutional. Well, if the Constitution had prevented the government from government officials and, you know, from breaking the law, the last 150 years wouldn't have occurred.
Right, exactly. I mean, if the Constitution, I mean, look, the Constitution is just, I mean, all it really is just a, people have this patriotic idea about it, but basically it's just a bunch of words that can be interpreted any way that the oligarch class wants. What you want is political power. Everything else is sort of irrelevant. It's the power that enables you to define the words. I mean, the words are great in many instances. Love these words. These words are, words to live by. But they're also words that are vague enough that evil people can manipulate them, and then we are stuck believing in the thing, like saying, well, I don't really like the fact that I've been enslaved and made into like a seahorse by the vaccine that they gave me. But gosh darn it, it was democracy,
Yes, the people have spoken.
right? The people have spoken, so I guess I have to be a seahorse. Well, I mean, look, you don't have to be a seahorse.
You don't think, well,
It's like I was. I'm sorry.
democracy doesn't, I mean, even if that democracy worked, as if people were informed and they made their decisions based on good information and they voted, and the people they voted for established policies that affect us all, that cover us all, that we're subject to, but all goes back because our representatives represent us. Well, it doesn't work that way, because it goes back to the idea that what the people think is reality is controlled by the few people who control the media, and they control the economy through their control of the money supply, so they can create false realities to manipulate the people. So it just doesn't work. I mean, it's like whoever I did you were you and I asked whether or not it would be a good idea to have hardcore porn being able to streamed on the internet, so any 10-year-old kid can watch it on a smart device.
Yeah, no,
Was that ever put up for a
that was
vote?
democracy, Tim. That was just democracy in action.
It was like it wasn't. No one asked me that, or did I? Did say here's a good idea. Let's have transvestite read fairy tale or read nursery rhyme stories and storybooks to kids in the library. Did I vote for that? I mean, it happened. These things happen, right? Did we vote
It
for
was a
abortion on demand and gay marriage? No, no one voted. In fact, it's said to people usually to the people who vote on these things, it goes the other way. So, that doesn't even function. Most of the laws and these things affect how people's, how they live, their viewpoint, their culture. No one votes about what type of entertainment fare they're given. It's just thrown out there to,
And no one even understands the propaganda elements. One thing that they've been able to do is they've been able to get all these propaganda elements into our lives, and we're not aware of them. I mean, we think that some that these are real personalities. That Rush Limbaugh actually is this independent thinker who has something that is beneficial to us if we pay attention to him. I mean. The concept of lifetime actor is really useful because it helps people just break free of the whole idea that the media world is non-propagandistic. It's what it is, And we have lost just our common sense when in terms of how we relate to democracy and to the world because we believe that this is a real world. I was asked, they were saying about we had this discussion about mandatory vaccines. And this the one guy was bringing up the Dershowitz argument, like, well, the states have all been the courts have already decided that they have the state has the right to do this. The state has a right to basically give you a vaccine that can change your DNA. They have a right. They've established it. The court has approved of it. And I said, well, actually, this hasn't occurred. I said, you're just deluded if you believe that. I said, this was a decision of the nature of the words, an interpretation of the Constitution that nine people who have been paid by the oligarchs to lie came up with. I said the real vote that the citizen has is to shoot the person who comes with the mandatory vaccine. I said that's the vote. That is the vote of the citizen. It's when you say, you know something, my body is actually my property. And I don't care what the people in the hot tub at Epstein's Island claim about what these words mean. I'm living in a world where life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is also a meaning I have control over my body. And so when they bring a vaccine to me or my children, that they're saying, well, your body is no longer really yours because these people, the Epstein Island hot tub group, decided against it. I'm going to say, fine. I'm going to shoot the person who brings it, and then I'm going to go after the guys at Epstein Island
Well, yeah,
because.
it was almost like when they imposed mandatory smallpox vaccine in Great Britain, and it was law. But those towns rebelled, and they stopped, and the law was changed.
And there it is. And this is
So much,
literally this is the vote of the citizen,
yeah,
and
that's
this
the
is the
law.
vote
Yes,
that
and
has
that
to be
basically
made.
goes back to power.
It always goes back to power.
Power,
Look, the
not
fact
words. I don't. Yeah, not words
the
in
fact
legislation
then
or
that people
constitution.
don't the people don't recognize that or even consider the possibility it isn't the case, it just shows you how effective the propaganda's been.
Yeah. Well, the court says this. Well, screw the court.
Screw the court.
Then, the hell
Yeah,
with the court.
where in the Constitution does it say they can change my DNA?
I know.
It doesn't
Well,
say
and also when they cite, I think it's Jacobs versus Massachusetts, that ruling.
Yeah, which they always miscite when they
Yeah,
cite it.
Oliver Wendell Holmes. Of course, that was the same court in Buck v. Bell that said the government has a right to forcibly sterilize you, and he was the one that said 3 generation of imbeciles is enough. And if you go to the facts of the case, it was all
I
fake.
know.
She
There, keep
there
it
was
safe.
she would they were basically they claimed that she came with a generation. If this woman reproduced, she'd have children that were criminal and retarded. No science at all. But by the way,
Yeah.
that was the they were following the science then.
Yeah, but
So
it's like,
you want to
remember,
follow the court that gave us Buck v.
it's not even
Bell,
the same
fine.
thing. The precedent that Dershowitz uses when he argues this is preposterous, because that was a vaccine that came out of something from nature. Remember, that was just an attenuated, smallpox from the real world. I mean, what they're putting into people now is something that is genetically created. It isn't from the real world. This isn't apples with apples.
I know, it's completely
What they're
different.
wanting to stick us with now is an absolutely brand new world, where they put stuff into our body that manipulates us. It isn't just stimulating, getting an antigen so that if we come across a smallpox virus, we have a response. This is manipulating what we are. So it's a different thing and it requires a different response. And we just have to always remember. I mean, I know it may sound, I don't know, horrible, but the final vote, the real vote, is the vote of the citizen in compliance. And when you say, no, I'm not going to comply, no, I'm not complying to this, that's the vote that counts. And then you just have to have the courage to back it up and just say, we're not going to comply, and non-compliance mean I'm going to physically defend myself against this attack.
Yep, that's the only response you can have when it gets down
The
to
only
that, so.
response you can have with, look, when they start turning us into seahorses, I use that as like worst case, but I mean it's you're losing control over the production of your proteins.
Yeah, and it all goes back to what? Goes back to the false PCR test, false positives, the fraudulent
Yeah.
PCR test, and the fact that even based on the current inflated numbers, the survival rate is 99.97%.
Yeah, I mean they don't have any, the principle they argue is the social good, the good of the whole, because if we're all vaccinated, we're somehow all protected. But the fact is that this particular virus is just, it may not even exist, and it doesn't have the power that would even bring this as a coherent argument to the citizen. Just it's impossible. But beyond that, even if it was, say it was going to kill 20% of the population, I would still argue, no, I'm sorry, you cannot come in and change my DNA.
I know, yeah. It's
It's just that isn't your right. We will all have to deal with this virus as best we can, but my body is my body, and it's just not going to, I'm not going to give it. You can encourage people to sacrifice it, self-sacrifice. That would be perfectly reasonable, but you can't mandate that people, give up the rights of their the production of their DNA to the state. I mean, that is the there's no difference between that and just complete the evaporation of the human spirit. Whatever it is we want out of the world would be gone at that point, and we'd just become part of the machine, quite literally.
Well, the moment you can create a state that is completely free from corruption and manipulation by a few, then when you present to me a state that you can prove that it's completely free of that manipulation, then okay, then I might consider your argument. But until then, sorry.
Yeah, I think I'll be in the sidelines. I'll tell you, Tim, this is going to be an interesting time between now and the 6th. The two choices would be a kind of feeble, feckless capitulation by Trump, where he just doesn't do anything, and it's the election was illegitimate. We're just going to have to live as Americans, with maybe next cycle we'll get a better result. Well, that would be really catastrophic, but it certainly is possible. The other is that they're going to try to, have a play the Pence card and just, have them count the votes the way that the Republicans want, which of course will lead to, another social circumstance, very violent.
Yeah, a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth, but legal, and it'd be interesting how that plays out. Yeah.
What do you think, Tim? If they actually do play the Trump card, we've talked about this before. I'm just curious. Do you think that the violence would just be just incredible levels, or would we kind of just skate through that?
I think you'll get some a significant amount of protesting, and it all depends what the response would be. It's hard to it depends on what the powers that be want. Or is this Trump really truly going rogue, meaning breaking free of his handlers, if you will? And at that point, he'd have to clamp down, on the rioters and reimpose authority over them. It can be done easily, but as we can see, he doesn't have control over the Justice Department or the FBI. And so it's a question, are we playing into the Transition Integrity Project, war game? This is
Well,
something,
I'll just say this. If you start to see really dramatic revelations, they've talked about bringing out revelations that would shatter, all of things. If this starts to happen, that would suggest to me that they are going to pull the plug on it. In other words, that they're going to have some kind of maneuver to create violence, which would be, having Pence count the votes the way they want. I mean, but if to do that, I would think they would prepare that, with a lot of revelations, like, look at how evil these people are. They've done this and that, because they would have them available to bring out if they want to go this route.
And of course, if Trump would prevail through this maneuvering with Pence, given the rhetoric that we've heard about massive election fraud, and if the Trump truly believes his tweets. He likes to tweet and do nothing, but in this case, he actually does something to back it up. You would think he'd be obligated to pursue a criminal investigation of this conspiracy.
Yeah, for sure. You mentioned this before. I thought it was an important point. You said that that he's required to not permit the election to go for of Biden to go forward, because if he believes any of
Basically, what he's
this,
saying, yes.
yeah, if he just believes that much, then he has a,
And
as I
so does
read the
Pence.
Constitution, yeah, he's got to just stand up and go, sorry, I know it's an unpopular thing, but we can't let this crook get into the White House. I don't know. If I had to bet right now, I would say that they're going to let Biden be president.
Yeah, betting? Yes, because I would it goes back to my saying, if you have to rely on the Republicans to win, you're not going
Yeah, I mean, right. I mean, these guys are—they pretty consistently, the rhinos certainly.
But I like you said, I reserve the right to be wrong or surprised. So.
Yes, indeed. And anyway, Tim, so be sure that over the next couple of weeks to be safe and stock up on toilet paper.
Enjoy the rest of the weekend, and I guess what we'll talk next year.
Hey, indeed, we will.
There you go. Oh,
All
sure.
right.
Great.
Yes,
Take
we'll see
care.
you. All right. Talk to you, Tim. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.